Hello, this is the Love Letter Squad. I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we are delighted to be back with you for another wonderful presentation. A really interesting concept is coming up. But before I introduce our guest, I just want to say briefly and to remind you that a love letter is so many things, and it is really something to anyone in your life for any reason at any time. It does not have to be for romance. It can be any kind of gratitude. A teacher you should thank, you realize now 30 years later, go find that teacher, find that address, and send a letter. It will be like a bag of diamonds out of the blue appears on her mail pile or his mail pile. So please just remember that, and when you're motivated and feel a thank you to somebody, why not write it down, stamp it, and mail it, and make somebody else's life richer? And the truth is, it'll make your life richer, too, because you'll get to bathe in the positive of a memory you may have almost forgotten.
And you may get something in return.
You may, yes. Well, you will get something in return from your own joy.
Just your own joy.
But you may get, that's right, I mean, I'm just being silly, but Teresa makes a point that you may get something amazing in return. That'll have an impact in your own life. So thank you. Okay, so I want to go to our guest, Ilana Berger, whose business is Mindful Partnership, Mindful Divorce. And there's a lot to talk about here, and I'm going to go to you in just a minute. But I just want to say, I think most people who have been through a divorce or seen friends through a divorce know that it can be one of the most hideous, painful times in a life, just ripping apart a relationship. And at the point where you want to become divorced, you're usually angry and you're out to do some damage to the other person, and Ilana works against that. So Ilana, I'm just going to go to you. Why don't you tell us what you do and then a story of your life?
Okay. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm. So what I do is I work with individuals and couples who are really in every stage of relationship, but a lot of my clients are in a divorce or contemplating a divorce. And I'm a spiritual counselor and a healer, not a psychotherapist. So how I approach working with people is to turn their awareness or their relationship with their struggle, whether it's a divorce or their relationship is just having a hard time, into a spiritual journey.
Okay, and I just want to say, I think to your credit, I was given Ilana's name by a very, very effective, well-known, powerful divorce attorney, and he finds her work so helpful that he wanted us to know about her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the attorneys like her.
Okay, go ahead. Well, I make it possible for attorneys to mediate divorces. So it moves you away from your anger and resentment to being able to cooperate with the person.
And people come to you in good spirits. What I mean is, if they're told that they should see you, do they do it grudgingly, or do they come open-heartedly thinking that you really will help?
Mixed.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, no one's going to come to me unless they're open to mm-hmm. Really exploring what's going
on. Or hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, if I were going to write a very direct book, it would be The Problem With Your Relationship Is You.
Uh-huh. It doesn't have to be a book. That sounds like an index card that would be very effective, or a bumper sticker.
Yeah, exactly, because we think that it's always the other person who hasn't been helpful, has not been kind, has been cheated on us, all kinds of reasons why we find that our relationships begin to fall apart.
But so if somebody's treated you badly, and we see so much of that in the news right now with that golfer, somebody's treated you badly and cheated and just extensively and excessively, how is that you, that you're the problem?
Well, you get to ask yourself, you're the one who is the other half of the relationship, so mm-hmm. what's your part? How did you played. Mm-hmm. Somehow you played. And so the healing is in really discovering how you played. Mm-hmm. And when you can take ownership of your part, there's a great empowerment that begins to happen.
So even staying with it would be your part?
What do you mean staying
with
it?
Well, even staying in a marriage where you're being treated badly, that would somehow be your part?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even if you're in an abusive relationship, you know, what we get to look at in that is, do you abuse yourself, and in what ways do you abuse yourself? Because one of the core principles that I work with is that the outer world is always a reflection of the inner world. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like what you're seeing in your outer world, if you turn the light of awareness onto yourself, you'll start to discover how you are doing exactly that same thing inside of yourself.
And isn't that true, not divorces aside, isn't that just true of all human relationships?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what is the part of your life and your marriage that led you somehow or motivated you or...
Well, I'd say a big part. I was married for 23 years. Mm-hmm. And I have three children. And I was unhappy. And I felt like it was all his fault.
Mm-hmm. So you started learning this from your own experience?
I started learning this totally out of my own experience. And, you know, my marriage completely fell apart. It was definitely some of the most spiritual time in my entire life.
How?
Because everything, I lost everything. So I lost my house. I lost my car.
Oh, you mean everything material also?
All my material identity, everything that defined me as me, being married and, you know, being a wife, and that was taken away. And because we were in such financial disaster, I had to seriously contemplate giving my children to my sister-in-law.
Oh, my.
Because I couldn't support them. My husband had quit his job. There was no money. It was awful.
How old were your children at that point?
Let's see. It's been, they were, oh, gosh, I'm trying to do the math here really quickly, but I'm guessing 10, 12, and 14.
Oh, so really at a, scarable age.
Definitely a scarable age.
So, and how long ago was that? How old are they now, may I ask?
My oldest is 29.
Oh, so they've all come through. Okay.
27 and 24.
And they were aware of what was going on?
No.
Oh.
In fact, my middle son, I remember saying to me, I thought I had this perfect family. And then one day I found out my mom and dad were getting divorced. So we were very good at not engaging the children. You know, we didn't fight, so it wasn't that kind of a problem. For me, the life had gone out of the marriage, and we were struggling financially, and I was on a spiritual tract, and we were out of integrity with living our values, and my husband was in denial that anything was falling apart. And so for me, the experience was, and I've said this to my husband a number of times, I felt like we were all standing on a railroad track with the train coming full speed towards us. And I kept saying, there's a train coming. Mm-hmm. And my husband kept saying, oh, no, it's not coming. No problem.
Uh-huh.
And in the last second, I pulled myself and my kids off the track. And
left him there?
Left him on the track. And so he got smashed a little bit, but he lived.
Okay, well, I'm glad he did. But now, so it was a surprise to him that you wanted this divorce?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise to him that I wasn't in love with him anymore.
Oh.
And really what I can say, you know, in a fast track forward is that I wasn't in love with myself anymore.
Mm.
And it felt like him. And it was easier to blame him because that's what our inner voice wants to convince
you didn't
us.
Like who you were when you were with him?
I just was unhappy with myself.
Uh-huh.
You know, I was
in
at
what
a,
way?
I was at a stage in my life where I'd been a mother. Mm-hmm. I had the privilege of being an at-home mom. And I homeschooled my children. And I loved my life to a certain extent. But then I got to that place where I thought motherhood was going to be the be-all and end-all, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And we were struggling financially, and I couldn't get a job that would make really, I thought it wouldn't make really a big difference in our life because I'd been a mother for many years and not in the workforce. And so what it would cost to get babysitters for the kids.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, not be there for, you know, $7 or $8 an hour didn't seem like it would help.
No.
In retrospect, it would have.
Oh, really?
It would have. It might have just paid for child care, but it would have changed the whole dynamic in
what
our
way?
Family. Because my husband wouldn't have felt like he had the full burden of the finances in the house. I would have been participating that way. It would have been empowering to me to be out of the house some of the day doing something that, you know, felt productive and felt like a contribution.
Would that have maybe change things enough that you would still be married to him?
Could.
Oh, could have. Interesting.
Yeah, could. You know, it's hard to say.
So when you work with couples now, are you more aware of something from having gone through that yourself?
Yes,
that you bring to the table?
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I tell my clients is that if two people are committed to the relationship, they can save their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't mean that they're happy right now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're committed to the relationship, not necessarily to the other person.
So
the relationship
itself.
Yeah. So that there's three bodies. You know, there's you, there's your spouse, and then there's the relationship. And it's up to me to fulfill my own needs. It's not my partner or spouse's responsibility. And it's up to my spouse to fulfill their needs. Not mine, but it's both of our responsibility to tend to the relationship. And as a couple, we establish what the needs of the relationship are, and we make a commitment to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so any relationship has intimacy needs, and it has time needs, and it has space needs. It needs food. Mm-hmm. It needs food, mm-hmm. air, and shelter.
Yes.
So essentially that's the core of what I teach. And then I work with spiritual principles to help people navigate how they get there, because most people aren't there, and really difficult to move from blame, criticism, and judgment to compassion.
So when you talk about spiritual, I think there are many people who hear spiritual and think it's a little bit far-fetched or goofy.
Yeah.
And you're such a practical person. I mean, just the look on your face is one of such practical delight. So how would you define that? I mean, how do you take somebody down a spiritual road? What is that that doesn't leave them in some area that's kind of gooey?
Well, the first principle that I work with is called the design beneath the chaos. And so it just holds a premise. And I might say that I believe this is a big experiment. So I invite people into an experiment. It's not dogma. There's nothing to believe in other than yourself. And that we're going to do an experiment, and you get to just notice what happens and if anything shifts for you. And what I find is that it always does shift for people.
Do you define spiritual when you start out, or do you just use it? I mean, how would you define it?
Well, let's see. What would I
say? Does that mean different things to different people?
Yeah, because people come with their religious connections, you know, yeah, if you're Catholic or you're a devout Christian or a Jew or a Buddhist or a Hindu,
mm-hmm.
That you have already have a spiritual foundation.
So you're using spiritual in that somewhat religious sense.
I'm using
not
spiritual in the
spirit.
Sense that there is a creative animating force in the universe.
Okay,
and
that's
if we
what
participate
I wanted to know.
With
okay.
it, we will step into the river of life.
That's important to know.
Or we can fight it. And we can assert our own will as if we know, and you'll get where you get to, but it'll be suffering.
Okay, so how do you start to take people down a road?
So the first principle is just to be able to stand in. There's a grand design that's taking place in the universe, and we don't know what it is.
So this is a given before you start.
Yes, this is the given. And so then the possibility or the experiment out of that is that if that even has a remote possibility of being true.
For you?
I mean, to the client, you're saying for you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that there's a grand plan mm-hmm. and we don't know what it is. Then can we trust that there's the possibility that this thing that's happening in their life was put there for a really sacred reason? And so if we turn toward it instead of resist it and turn away from it, perhaps something different will begin to unfold in our life.
How interesting.
And so we get to see it as a gem, as a jewel, or a treasure chest that we get to open and explore, like, why is this here? Why am I having this challenge and this difficulty? Who is this person for me? And I hope by the time people are done working with me that they'll be able to see their spouse or their partner as a Buddha in their life, or the Bodhi tree that the Buddha sat under that has brought all of these incredible lessons and insights into our life that we would have absolutely never discovered.
Yes, I think that has to be true.
I would say so.
So now do you ever have people come to you with an eye toward divorce, and then by the time they're through with your process and learning what they learn from you, that they realize that they don't want to be apart, that they can be together?
Yes, I've had a number of clients that have come to me and then gone back to their partner and said, would you be willing to work on this? You know, some are, some aren't.
Right. But short of that, if people go ahead with a divorce, they can do it with less acrimony and blame?
Absolutely. And hopefully, especially if there's children involved, mm-hmm. they'll be able to be kind and loving to each other for the benefit of their children. Remember, get back to what it was that attracted them
yes.
initially and reconnect with the love that they actually yeah. have for
That's
each other.
That's so important. I mean, we talk about that in letter writing to people who are no longer in your life, and just to bathe in the positive.
Yeah.
And remember it. You know, you didn't get attracted to somebody simply because he or she was a monster. I mean, if you did, that's a whole other problem, and that, of course, needs help, too.
Well, but that's another insight.
Yeah,
so it's not even
exactly.
a problem. It's like an aha. Like,
uh-huh.
wow, you know, I am used to being treated badly.
And not that you can't use it for a healing way, yes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think most people who come together see the nuggets of good in there, and that's what they're attracted to.
Yeah. Well, what I believe or mm-hmm. bring forth in, you know, how I work with people is that we're not designed to discover things about ourselves without having a mirror. And that's what our relationships are. They're a reflection of ourselves. And so the universe has this magnificent way of attracting exactly the right person into our life that's going to help us grow. To me, that's what a real soulmate is. We
yes.
think a soulmate is somebody that's all yummy and good and it's the perfect.
Well, that would
be
a nice addition.
Easy. It's nice to have that as well.
Right.
But a real soulmate uh-huh. is somebody who helps you really discover why you're here and what work you have to do in this lifetime and to heal it.
Even if you don't always agree on things or even if you have very different styles?
You mean you and your partner?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a soulmate could be someone that you don't have a lot in common with, but that person allows you to be you or helps you grow?
Well, no, it's more, that could be true as well, so not no, but what I'm speaking of is that a soulmate is somebody who can poke and punch and touch all of your triggers. They know just exactly how to make you angry.
So it's a conscious thing, it's not an accidental thing?
Well, I think it's a conscious thing on the part of the universe. Yeah, because where we get triggered is exactly the place where we have the opportunity to look and see, why am I getting triggered? Like, what's here
but you
for
said,
me?
But you said before that you choose somebody based on what is reflected inside. So it's conscious on our own parts also.
Yes, because
we take
fall
part
in love
in
with
that.
Ourselves. So we can only know that which we already are.
Okay.
Or we can't recognize it. So we fall in love with the light and brightness and beauty of who we are that we see in the other person. But
oh,
we
I
also
I can understand that because I think part of being in love is you love who you are when you're with that person.
Yeah, and
you are your best when you're with
them. And what you love in that person
yes.
is actually you.
Okay.
You know, if they're kind, if they're loving, if they're beautiful, if they're generous, all of that, if you can just look at that and say, you know, here are all the things I love about this person, that's who I am.
Okay. Interesting.
And equally so, all the things that I don't like about that person that
yes.
I find irritating and annoying.
I think that's kind of a common thing that people are aware of, you know, the thing you hate most in somebody else is what you don't like in yourself, and it just brings. I think that's a common wisdom.
Yes, but we typically don't take it to the good.
Right. Yes, that's what I was going to say.
They
that.
Have
now,
our bad.
So you said that you had written letters to your husband.
I have,
and that you recently wrote him. May I ask what kind and what it was?
Well, the first letter that I wrote to him was recognizing one day I was sitting with one of my groups that I was working with and had this grand discovery that I think I mentioned that I was really unhappy with myself, and here all those years I thought I was unhappy with him. And, you know, and not to say that he didn't have a role to play, because he did indeed.
I'm sure, yeah.
He had 100% responsibility for his 50%. But I
How
had him
put.
I had him owning, you know, at least 90%. You know, and I was the good, wonderful, mm-hmm. perfect player in this, and it was really all his doing. And so I had this insight that really, in those years, I was really unhappy.
So what
with
were you
me.
Able to say to him?
I said exactly that.
Oh,
that
good.
What I discovered is years of blaming and criticizing him for not being enough.
How did he respond to this?
He was very, very moved.
Oh, I bet. I'm
he
very,
was very,
very
moved.
Moved.
Yeah, he was.
That accepting responsibility in a relationship gone not well is a beautiful, beautiful kind of love letter.
Yeah.
And what I would consider, you too, Teresa, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Just something that qualifies so highly for an important love letter. And, yes, taking responsibility and letting somebody else off the hook.
Yeah.
What greater act of love could there be sometimes?
Yeah. And that he was, in a lot of ways, he didn't have a lot of choices once I had made the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt sad about that. And regretful
you.
About yeah. that. And apologize.
What's his life like? Is it
oh,
okay?
He's delighted. He's wonderful. And
oh,
and I have another thing to say that was a practice that I did. Because we had a lot of financial troubles, and I know from my own experience of working with couples, that is often a real destroyer in a relationship
yes.
is when you start running into financial problems. And it becomes the blame game as to mm-hmm. who's really responsible. You know, maybe the wife spent too much
uh-huh.
money and
right.
so, you know, didn't have any respect for how hard the husband worked. Or if it's a same-sex couple, you have the same problems. One's at home and how come he never went to work?
Mm-hmm.
And you
mm-hmm.
get into the blame game. And so that was also part of our problem. And so when we split up, what I did is every day I made a gratitude prayer mm-hmm. for my husband's prosperity and abundance, because I knew that if he was prosperous and abundant, that he would take care of our kids,
of course,
in
yes.
a really good way.
And has this come to pass?
And it has.
I'm so glad.
So
oh.
he has become, you know, financially viable, and he's remarried, and he's happy, happy man.
I'm so glad to hear that. Now, you said, when I asked you earlier who would get your love letter today, you had said originally you were going to think of writing to him, but you'd like to write to your children. And how much time do we have that we can start?
Well, okay. About 5 minutes.
Well, let's start. Let's
okay.
just start what you would like to tell your children. I'm going to take notes for you, because then I'm going to give them to you so you don't forget some of the things you say. Would you write to them one letter for the three of them, or individual letters?
Probably all three of them together.
Okay.
My three sons are very, very close.
Nice.
And so, you know, that's another great thing that came out of the divorce. I think they would have been close, because that was an important thing that I taught them all
mm-hmm.
along, was that, you know, there's something about blood
good.
That you can take advantage of. It's not always true in a family that, you know, you love who you got born
sure.
into a family with.
Yes. So what is it that you would want to tell them? Let's just write down those things. And we're saying that a letter full of what we say and believe is that specifics is the key to a great love letter. You're so special, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So I think one of the things is really recognizing that, you know, losing their nuclear family was
mm-hmm.
not easy.
Mm-hmm.
It was not easy. And that I don't think I was the greatest at keeping their father innocent in their eyes.
Oh, how interesting to say such a thing. Okay.
Yeah, I was really mad at him,
mm-hmm.
and I would say things like, "Well, we can't go do that, or we can't buy that at the market because mm-hmm. your dad didn't send the money yet."
Uh huh. I see. Yeah.
Like that.
Yes.
You know. So then it's subtle.
Mm-hmm.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a lie. It was true, but they didn't need to know that. It could have just been a no.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Without a qualification.
And what else? What about?
And so what that, I think, might have done is created more and more distance between them and their father.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really angry with their dad. They felt deeply abandoned. And I think I could have also, because he ended up, I wanted him to move to Los Angeles. We were living in Santa Cruz, mm-hmm. and get a job because he had quit his job, mm-hmm. and so there was no money. I didn't work, and there was no money. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to him, you know, the electric bill is here. You know, what are we supposed to do with that? And his response was, well, I don't know, Ilana. You'll just have to figure that out. Mm-hmm. And I was so angry because I felt abandoned. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was made the children feel abandoned along with me, and I didn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. They didn't need to know any of the details.
Okay, so I'm just interested in terms of a letter, because your refrain, which is just kind of such a beautiful part of the music of this letter, is, I didn't need to do that.
Yeah.
Will you actually say that?
Yeah,
I didn't need to do that. I think that's so lovely.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't need to do. Sometimes a letter has a built-in theme.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of a story person, mm-hmm. so I see,
yeah, that's beautiful.
You know, themes in it, or, but the, I did this and I said that, I didn't need to do that. When we were at the market and I can, you know, I told you that I couldn't get it because your dad hadn't sent us the money. I didn't need to do that. There's something lovely about a rhythm to a letter.
Mm-hmm.
And this is beginning to sound like a letter of apology.
Well, kind of, yes, a letter of apology. And we talk about this, the beauty of love letters of apology. There's those are so good. I mean, I we'll have to do a whole other segment on that because that's just critical. But there is such a way of apologizing by the specifics, by not just saying I'm sorry, but I mean, clearly you're regretful in this, and that'll come through. But the story of the specifics, and will you say something? And I'm rushing a little bit because we only have a couple of minutes, and I know what a good letter writer you are, and how honest and easily honest you are. So you're not going to need any kind of help with that. But will you include something about their personal qualities and strengths in this letter?
Yes. Well, one of the things that happened because of that was that my oldest son, I think, felt like he needed to be the man of the house.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so it's created a lot, I think, a lot of pressure for him and made it so that the other boys turned to him instead of their father. Mm-hmm. And I would like
a whole
him
other
to,
issue,
yeah, not to have to feel like they do have a father and they have a good father.
Good.
And
so that this letter can be just kind of self-contained in its own. But at some point, I think it's so nice for children to have the kind of love letters from parents or grandparents that say, you are just the best. Here's what I've always loved about you. And their children will find it. Their grandchildren will find it. And to me, the beauty of this is three generations later, they're going to know something about you and how you loved and what their pedigree is.
Right. And the beautiful thing is that all three of them always kept their hearts open.
Oh, okay.
So even though they had some anger about how things turned out, they always kept their hearts open to their dad and to me.
Wonderful. So you have a lot to say to them.
Yeah.
I'm glad you're going to do this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Well, I'm sorry we have to end this. We could go on and on.
I wish we could.
But time is running out. So just time to remind people to please join us every week at this time. We're here with wonderful guests, stories to tell, and letters to write. We thank you for joining us. And we hope that you will always put your loving thoughts into words and
say what you
them.
Feel while you still have the chance.
And
let's give this for her website.
Okay.
Yes, please.
I don't have my glasses on.
Oh,
it's,
you say your website.
www.mindfulpartnership.com or mindfuldivorce.com.
Okay, mindfulpartnership.com or mindfuldivorce.com. And with this, we will tell you goodbye for now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.